Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Gobeski Wallace Report. My name's Charlie Wallace.
I'm Adam Gobeski, and we've got with us a couple astronomical guests. We've got Doug Gobeski.
That is how they measure my belt size these days, in astronomical units.
This is where Charlie inserts the Ed McMahon hey-o clip. and Paul Wilcox.
It's great to be here.
So, Charlie.
Yeah.
What is the occasion for this illustrious edition?
Oh, the occasion is this is the time that works because we just have so few times because of your schedule and my schedule and everyone's schedule to get together. So we are podcasting at 11. Well, I guess it's 11 Central. Now it's 11:30 Central on a Saturday.
Yeah. At the time I started the recording, which was long before you showed up for some reason, I've been awake for 20 minutes.
That was about the same for me, honestly. That's only because that's what I set the alarm for.
Same.
Paul?
Yeah, I didn't set an alarm, but I was...
Oh, living dangerously.
I didn't think it was dangerous, and then I wake up at like 11:30, and I'm like, oh, crap.
Here's where we learn that Charlie's been up for 36 hours.
Well, he does have kids. I assume they're like puppies, and they jump on his bed. And
oh, but they're not. They're not here right now. I told you that, right? That's another reason I could podcast more easily on a Saturday afternoon.
How did you tell me, the listeners, this?
Oh. My kids are out of town. It's spring break, and they're visiting grandma and grandpa up north. So I still had to work yesterday and the day before that. So they went up and...
Are you going to meet them at some point, or is this a spring break for you as
they're
well?
They're actually, yeah, for a couple of days, but they're actually coming back in a few hours because of ice storms.
Oh.
Trying to miss some ice storms. By the way, in Madison, it was almost 80 degrees yesterday. And 4 hours north of here, there were ice storms.
Isn't that an Ang Lee movie?
It is.
So it's just, is it like DVDs and Blu-rays pelting?
I remember I saw like part of that on cable. I keep remembering it's like, was it Elijah Wood or Tobey Maguire in that? And then I always look it up and I'm like, oh, they were both in that.
Wow.
Who knew?
And adults having key parties and yeah, ice everywhere. Maybe somebody jumping into an empty pool. This is what I know about that.
I feel like you're describing Project X.
What was Project X? I don't remember that.
It's a party movie from like the 2000s, I want to say.
Oh, hmm.
I know nothing about it.
Okay, vague rememberings, yes, of that.
Oh, 2012. Wow. Seriously?
Yeah. That does feel like two decades ago, though.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be the last year.
Maybe it was.
Yeah. We're just in some sort of like after image
or purgatory
right now.
So I'm hereby making a change to the Gobeski Wallace report.
All right. I'm for it. Well, no, let me hear it. I'm for change, but I don't know what this change.
We are no longer primarily a podcast about Sequest DSV.
Oh, no.
We can still talk about it. It's just no longer the primary focus. But this is now a retro gaming podcast.
Okay.
So can we talk about Sequest DSV, the video game?
Absolutely. That's retro, baby. It's a game I am ashamed to say I've never played.
I don't think I have either.
Anyone else on this podcast?
I mean, if you guys haven't, I clearly haven't. Here's where we find out that Charlie is secretly addicted to it. What is it even for? Is it Super Nintendo?
And Genesis, I think. I think there's a Genesis version too.
There was a Sega Genesis port 1 year later in 95.
I remember
everyone's favorite THQ. Oh, that's just in the EU.
Yeah. I remember I would occasionally see it at what the hell is that place called? Mega Media Exchange in Madison.
Oh, yeah.
But it was always like more than I was willing to pay, which is to say they wanted like actual money.
Yeah, I think that store is no more.
I assume a lot of these places are victims of the pandemic such.
Yep.
We still have at least one in my area.
What about that one that was like a mile from your apartment? And then when we went there, they were having like a fire sale.
That's the one that's still there. It's just a couple doors down. So I think it moved into a smaller part of the strip mall.
Oh, like yeah. That was just their downsizing sale?
I think so.
That's crazy.
Well, I know I got a couple wicked deals on stuff there. I'm pretty sure I got like the first season of Picard on Blu-ray for like maybe, I think it was like $8 or something like that, which is a crazy price, like crazy good price. But sorry, that's not retro gaming, so we can't talk about that.
I am in a big DVD, like ever since I got my new old TV. I'm hooked on DVDs.
What about VHS?
That too, but it doesn't maximize that TV. But I did finally pop in some of those tapes that I bought in was it Zia? I know I brought back some anime VHS tapes from Arizona. Yeah. Time.
Where was that?
I'm not going to name them here on the podcast. they were OVAs from the 90s.
I remember you bought a bunch of stuff from Disc Traders while
that
I
was a
there.
Whole lot of videotapes I bought for, I think they were $1 each individually, but like buy one, get one. So I bought every tape for 50 cents each. Now they actually legit sell tapes there for much higher prices.
Yeah, VHS is resurging for some reason.
I'm going to try to catch the DVD boom now that I have a TV that's perfect for 480i content.
So are you going to Disc Traders and just taking advantage of their buy one, get the rest of the store free sale?
I do. I'm waiting for the next text. Like when they're like buy two, get nine, I'm like, I'm holding out for 10.
But how else are you going to pick up the core?
You know, I will be surprised if I can find the core. I do have to look, though.
I mean, I flipped through the Zia bargain bins and found a copy. But I think it was you had to buy two to get it. So I had to buy, I think I bought a sealed copy of the Blues Brothers as well. But yeah, sorry. Not retro media, retro gaming. We're a retro gaming podcast.
Oh, so like Call of Duty 4 or Modern Warfare 4?
When did those come out?
I don't know. If I had to guess, I'd say probably like 2016 or something.
Yeah, that feels a little recent.
That's just a guess, though. I stopped playing after Modern Warfare 2.
What about Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare from 2007?
Yeah, I think that's starting to be retro.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost 20 years old at this point.
Is that the cutoff? 20?
Oh, maybe they only made 3 Modern Warfares. Nope. They only made 3.
Of the new Modern Warfares?
Oh, gosh. I don't know about that. We're not going to get Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare 4.
If it's new, we can't talk about it. So, what is the cutoff? Great question. What do we think?
I think we should tie it not to a time, but to business practices. It's retro if you could just buy the game and it like worked on the first day. And you have
forever. Did the PS3 and 360 era, did they have patches and games? I can't remember these days.
They actually probably did.
I think so.
Okay. So nothing from that point forward is what I'm hearing here.
So like PS2 era and back.
Yeah.
Wasn't there like an issue with the first run of GoldenEye cartridges? Or maybe it was Perfect Dark cartridges?
It's Perfect Dark.
Okay, yeah. So like...
But you couldn't patch that.
You were just screwed.
And you certainly weren't issuing refunds. Actually, I don't know. Did they do anything like that?
I know there's a patched version because I have the patched version. But it's like a second run of the cartridge. It's like revision 1 something. But I don't know if they had a like an exchange program set up or anything.
I mean, are we getting to the point where even a game made 20, well, not 20 years ago, but like 15 years ago, maybe a game that no physical copies ever existed? Can that be retro gaming if it was a completely digital game?
Probably still.
I think all video games are digital games.
Okay, sure.
Are you sure about that?
All right, I guess.
Odyssey 1?
I used to love playing on my oscilloscope, just looking at the sine waves.
But the Action Max may count as analog. That's the one where you put special videotapes in, hook up your console, and then it's basically a light gun game based on what's happening on the videotape.
But my wording aside, how do we feel about that if there never existed a physical copy of the game? Does it matter?
I don't think it does. It just makes it harder to track down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and preserve.
But I mean, there's someone out there who's got the torrent pack of the WarioWare complete collection or whatever.
Aren't those physical?
Were they? I actually don't know anything about that era. Isn't there like a DS, like digital only, like collection of games or something?
Oh, I guess there might be some DSi stuff.
That might be what I'm thinking of. Yeah. The DSiWare.
I feel like what we're learning here is that games that did not have physical presence just sort of dissipate into the ether.
That's true.
Like, they can't be retro because they just cease to exist.
Oh, yeah.
Like, to be a retro game,
you have to be able to encounter it today. And remember it
after
its heyday.
Otherwise, it's just, at that point, it just means it's history.
Yeah.
All right, but definitions are boring. What retro games you guys playing lately?
I downloaded Zool Redimensioned for the PS4, which is a remake / port of an Amiga game, I believe, and played through a few levels of that because they, as part of the redimensioning, they make the game much easier. You can still play it in classic mode, but I was like, we'll just do the lazy modern gamer version.
The widescreen version?
Yeah, widescreen with double jump and...
zoomed out a bit, I saw.
Yeah.
Because my memory of Zool on the Amiga back in the day was that it was partly difficult because you couldn't see what was happening until it was too late just because the restricted size of screen and large sprites and stuff.
Yeah.
How zoomed in it was, I mean. So how was it playing Zool Redimensioned?
It's okay. Good for a bit of fun for, you know, worth the couple dollars I paid for it or whatever.
Okay.
And then I went back to modern games. Still working my way through Final Fantasy Origins, Stranger of Paradise.
And you can't talk about that. That's not retro. That's not what we do here.
I mean, it's kind of... Isn't it based in the Final Fantasy 1 universe or something?
Yeah, actually. Although it's also kind of based in all of them. Because...
Just based?
Like, some of the levels... Yeah, kind of.
All
right. The main character, Jack, is very unconcerned with anything that's not fighting chaos. Well, killing chaos. He's like, oh, your crops are dying? That doesn't help me kill chaos.
Combine that with, you know, a vaguely Ed Hardy t-shirt aesthetic and you have a recipe for a based video game.
I don't know. I feel like Ed Hardy is too retro to be based.
You know,
a newer concept.
Yeah, that's true. I just imagine there to be overlap, but, you know, those were like different people back then.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of those Ed Hardy guys are
like maybe the base people now are, maybe they were influenced by seeing the older Ed Hardy people. Hmm. Have you been playing any retro games lately, Adam?
Oh, yeah. I've been retroing it up. I recently bought an Atari 7800 Plus on a discount through Woot, which is apparently an Amazon company that offers secret discounts, I guess.
Oh.
So how'd you find out about it?
It was on the Atari Age forum. They were like, hey, this thing is on Woot for, I think it was $85 at that point. And I went and clicked the link and I was like, oh, it's actually $80 now. Normally it retails at like $130, I think. Basically, what I was interested in was it's a Atari 7800 with HDMI output. And then it came with a brand new like 7800 game, Bentley Bears Crystal Quest, and a wireless European style 7800 pad controller as opposed to a joystick.
So you don't get crippling arthritis in your hands?
Well, it turns out you do because the buttons are spaced slightly too far apart.
All right, then.
Nice.
So that's been especially a problem for this Crystal Quest game that requires you to do run and jump style actions where you have to like, I'm basically holding down the button with my thumb and then trying to hit the other button with like the whatever this thumb bone right at the joint is at where it connects to the wrist, the hand. So, and the buttons are slightly recessed on the controller. So it's like, you know, they're not sticking like straight up like a Nintendo controller. Like they're in a bit of a groove. So,
you wouldn't want to accidentally hit them.
You know, right.
You need to play your video games like you factory reset your laptop.
Yeah. So now the game does offer a one button option where you just jump by pressing up. And I tried that, but it turns out that Bentley Bear has serious air manip. So you can't press up. You have to press up and to the right. And I was not doing that and just falling and dying and stuff. So I had to go back to two button because that was ultimately better. I think it's a game really designed for the Pro Line joysticks where you can just equal access both buttons. But that's not what shipped with the console. Although it is they are compatible with the console, obviously. So
can you buy a new Pro Line joystick?
Not from Atari, at least not yet. I wouldn't be shocked if you can buy like new old stock just like on the internet. But they have a wired and wireless version of the pad, and then wired and wireless versions of the classic 2600 joystick. But that's only a one button. But yeah, so I was playing that, and then dug out a bunch of old 2600 games that I have here that I hadn't gotten around to testing and just making sure they worked.
Didn't I get you those like 9 years ago?
You got some of them for me 9 years ago. I had picked up others at like Sia's and stuff.
They're almost retro games over again now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they all worked, and so I've been playing some games like Moonsweeper and No Escape, which is an interesting sort of that's in a Magic game. That's a sort of, it's like a breakout Space Invaders, where basically you have these aliens. Well, they're not aliens. They're the Furies from Greek myth, and you're some hero. You shoot something at the ceiling, and then bricks like rain down, kind of like Breakout. But the goal is to get the bricks to fall and hit the Furies. Because if you attack them directly with like your ball, then they basically start to multiply. So you can't do that. It's an interesting take. I was enjoying it. And then I played a Sega game called Thunderground that was kind of like Dig Dug mixed with like just like a standard shooting game. So like you drive a tank around trying to shoot particular spots on the map. And other tanks are driving around trying to stop you and shoot you. So you have to shoot them first. It was fun.
And of course, for me, UFO 50 doesn't count. So I, unsurprisingly, I have not done any retro gaming recently.
Are you still doing UFO 50?
No, I haven't really got the chance to do it, but I will go back to it.
So that doesn't even count.
No, it doesn't count for two reasons.
It doesn't count because it's not retro, and also I'm not playing
it. I mean, I could list the things I'm not playing.
Where's the cutoff for when you're no longer playing something anymore?
That's true.
Like, do you get a year buffer? Like, I think we should be at least a year.
I'm coming back to it eventually.
When I carry around my laptop, I have the controller in the laptop bag, which I don't always have, just in case I want to play UFO 50. Does that count as playing it?
Wait, you don't have the actual UFO, the console?
Oh, no, I hear that's very rare. Like, there's only one of them, canonically.
It's almost as rare as it gets.
Yeah.
Wait, so you're just playing emulators?
I guess so. Ah. I guess somebody uploaded it to the dark web of Steam, where I purchased it.
Wait, you paid money for an emulated game? The heck?
50 emulated games.
I would swear I saw someone put together, like, a 3D printed version of the console that just had like a Steam Deck or something inside.
Oh,
but
nice.
I can't find it right now.
I guess there is like a static picture of it when you start up.
Yeah.
Start up the program. So yeah, so maybe there is enough to go on. I am considering doing Nintendo Online just because Celeste keeps asking. She and Connor both like to listen to video game music because of us, right? We introduced them to it. And so we're like, oh, play music for Mario or, you know, play Zelda music or whatever, and then she'll ask, what game is this from? And I'll be like, oh, this is from A Link to the Past. And she'll be like, I'm going to play that. I'm like, I guess technically you could. So,
do you have the Switch Online subscription?
No, we don't. So,
well, you should, because that'd be the easiest way. And
yeah, exactly.
If you have a Switch Online subscription, you get access to the Nintendo Music app.
Oh, which would be really cool, actually.
That has a whole bunch of soundtracks from various games, although not nearly as many as you would want. They are slowly dripping them out. I think the most recent releases were the two Tetris, or Tetris for Nintendo and Tetris for Game Boy, which apparently actually have fairly different music. But
if you make a alt account in the Japanese region, you can get a bigger selection too. You
have really?
To switch over to that, but you can't do it. I've done it with Switch Online before. There's surprisingly little that doesn't overlap, but there are some. Like, this was years ago when I did that, but. Yeah. Or if you feel like playing the Japanese versions, you know, for whatever reason, you can do that.
I mean, that does bring up my other retro gaming thing that happened recently, which is that I went to the local book off store, which is a used media store that has a large focus on like Japanese stuff, manga, anime, lots of figures and those is it gachapon?
Oh, like the little capsule toys?
Yeah,
the little plastic capsule toys. Things.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a whole bunch of those. But they also had a bunch of Famicom games. So I had a desire yesterday. I was like, I'm gonna go buy some Famicom games. I think because I was reading a Nintendo book, like talking about the early years of the US Nintendo, but they kept mentioning Famicom stuff. And I was like, I'm gonna go get some. I know where I can go. And so I got there and there were two, like, trying to think of the best way to describe them. They weren't really nerds. They were more like douche bros.
The new nerds.
Yeah. But just standing right there, flipping through every single one. And I'm like, that's what I want to be doing. So I had to go. So I had to go look at the Blu-rays while I just would keep listening out for clack, 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 because they just flip through each cartridge because they're in these like tray thing, like pull out trays, basically. So they finally left and I was able to go and flick through some stuff and found a few cool games based on stuff that didn't get releases in the US that looked interesting and were cheap. Those were based on my criteria. Oh, and generally speaking, had an English title on them somewhere, so I knew what I was getting. So I picked up a copy of Galaxian, which I actually had on a Famiclone pirate cart. Like, how many games were on that, Doug? 32-1, maybe?
Something like that.
40, maybe? I don't know. But it had a whole bunch of, like, first-gen Famicom games, and that included Galaxian. So I got to get my Galaxian fix on. Picked up a game called Challenger that's actually kind of interesting from Hudson Soft, where it starts out as like a platformer and then turns into like almost a Zelda-style game. It was very strange, but interesting. Although it has this like difficulty setting that just goes from low to high and has like 16 settings. And as far as I can tell, the only thing that changes is the number of enemies on the screen. So I set it all the way to like the lowest setting and basically there were no enemies. Which I subsequently learned is a problem because apparently you need to level up your weapons by shooting enemies. So if they're not there. Yeah. So they
it wrapped all the way around to hardest difficulty.
Yeah. They were basically, I read a couple reviews online after the fact when I was trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And they were like, yeah, sometimes the easiest difficulty is actually harder. Just stick with medium.
It's like a walking simulator where you end up like just running into like a giant boss or something at some point and getting destroyed.
Yeah, pretty much. Let's see. I also got a copy of Mahjong, which, as you, I'm sure, can expect, is completely unplayable because all the text is in Japanese.
What? You're not learning how to play Mahjong via a Japanese Famicom game?
I think I was hoping maybe it was in English. Yeah. Because a lot of the Famicom games are in English for whatever reason. And are completely playable. But Mahjong is not one of those. I'll have to get one of those like camera translator apps to see what's going on.
That is, it does work surprisingly well compared to the past.
Yeah, I don't figured
know how good the character recognition on the NES type fonts is going
to
be.
I mean, that's fair. But it seemed to me like that might be a reasonable use case because I doubt it's deeply nuanced, complicated text on the Mahjong game. It's probably just like it pass or whatever.
A lot of times on NES too, it's all like all in hiragana, like there's no kanji because they didn't have the pixels to print complex enough characters.
Okay, so
which makes it easier to sound out and harder to read at the same time.
And then I picked up a copy of Ganbare Goemon 2, basically because I recognized it, because Paul got me the first Ganbare Goemon a long time ago.
I'm glad you could round out the collection, although I don't know how many others there are for Famicom.
When I looked it up, it looked like there's two main and then two Gaidens.
Okay. That might be a good use case for some game you can play generally and then
pull out the translator app.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's definitely enough text in there where I'm like, I'm not 100% sure what I'm doing, but also I'm just fighting these guys, so it's fine.
So there's this Twitch streamer, The Beast, and he's beating every N64 game, and he like edits the video down into like a summary later and puts it on YouTube, and I've been watching those. And that includes all regions as well.
Oh, wow.
And so he's beating like, you know, and he knows no Japanese, so he's like screen translating all these like N64 Mahjong games and stuff like that. Or just like playing these like N64 like pachinko games with like insane win conditions and spending like hours on it. It's really really interesting. I'll link the playlist because kind of neat to see some of those lesser known N64 games.
Yeah, I should mention that Book Off also had Super Famicom and Japanese N64 games, but I was only focused on the regular Famicom.
The nice thing about the Super NES and N64 is it's just physical lockouts for the cartridges. I mutilated my Super NES and removed the tabs that block you from playing Japanese Super Famicom games.
Mm, yeah.
But I have a 3D printed bracket for my N64 that I haven't installed yet to let me.
I believe if you use like a Game Genie or something, that also, because it just sits above the tabs, basically.
Oh, that would make sense. Like it doesn't. There's no the physical lockout isn't on the Game Genie.
Yeah, I don't think. I'd have to double check. I don't think it has the tabs though. I think that. I know what you do Genesis, about the N64 right? though. Yeah, exactly. Like what we did with the Genesis for the Mega Drive games.
Yeah.
What about you, Paul? You doing any retro gaming lately?
You know, not a lot, but I've been doing lots of fiddling with retro gaming setup.
That counts.
It's more important to, you know, to fiddle with the environment than to actually, you know, play the games. Probably the most recent thing I did retro game wise was I was playing Mega Man 2 on the NES, but I never played on the difficulty.
Oh.
Like, and it's kind of interesting because you'd think you'd just like take more damage or the enemies would take more damage, but there's actually some things that are different about it completely. Like there's enemies that behave differently. Like, you know, I can't remember what level. I think it might be in the Metal Man level where you have sort of those stacks of guys. They're like maybe four like cylinders tall and they kind of wiggle. And they have like fakes.
The Metal Man? Is that like the Metalloid?
The Metalloid Maniac?
Yeah.
Wow, that was the original Metalloid Maniac.
It's the wall that he built.
It's so cool. So in the difficult version of that, like, so in the when you play on easy, or I think it's called normal, you shoot those guys in like the face and they just blow up one hit. But on difficult, you shoot them in the face and then they scatter into their like component parts, like towards you. So you have to dodge them. It's like a totally different, it's almost like a different enemy. I thought that was kind of, I don't know, that was pretty cool. But actually, I'm going to post a picture because it's very good for podcasting. I got an AV cart that my work was getting rid of, and that included, you know, a DVD and a DVD player and a VCR, which is why I was talking about that. But I also put some other CRTs on the cart.
CRTs?
Wait, what? How about that?
Just assumed it'd be shelves with multiple retro systems and just 1,000 cables running up the back.
That's kind of what it is.
Oh, okay. Wait. Oh, wow. I think this TV is much bigger than I had realized.
It is a absolute team lift. Like you'd never move it on your own. That picture does make it. I mean, it's a 32 inch. Mm. So it's probably like 150 pounds.
Wow.
Ooh. I had to take a guess.
Well, I'm glad you can still play light gun games.
That is, I actually probably should get some later era ones. What were some of the good, like PS1 and 2 era, like Time Crisis and stuff?
Time Crisis is the one that came to mind.
I guess the question is, are you going to dramatically wheel in that cart for guests, like from a back room or something?
So that was my thought, but I have no back rooms that this giant cart would wheel into. I took it down my little like narrow hallway and tried to move it into my office or my bedroom. It won't make the turn. It's the hallway's not big enough.
Oh, so you got to remodel.
Basically, yeah. I got to take out this, turn this. Wow, that's actually a great idea. I could bring this back single bedrooms, you know, two bedrooms into a one giant bedroom. That'd be sweet.
You should probably finish your upstairs before you start on that project.
I think we'll do some demo first.
Let me make the whole house unlivable.
Let's start knocking down load-bearing walls. Hey, if I make the downstairs unlivable, maybe that'll help me finish the upstairs. The upstairs is not done because the downstairs is too livable.
At some point, Paul is only accessing his house through a ladder perched against an upstairs window.
I'm trying to create a realistic Home Alone 2 simulation.
This is how I live.
Your neighbors call the cops every day.
Someone's trying to break in. So what retro gaming topics would you want to talk about, Charlie, on our new retro gaming podcast?
So it's retro gaming. So, like, I guess you could talk about consoles, too. Is that within the scope of it? Okay.
Yeah, that's what you want to talk about.
Yeah, well, what console do you want that you don't have?
What console do I want that I don't have?
That's retro.
A Bally Astrocade. That'd be cool.
Oh.
I've never even seen one. Saw a couple cartridges once at Disc Traders, but not the actual machine.
When is that from?
Like 78, 79, something like that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Do you have a Neo Geo?
I don't have a Neo Geo. I once saw one at Game Hits for $400 with a bunch of cartridges.
Oh.
And I still occasionally regret not getting it, even though there's no way I could have ever afforded it at that time.
You regret not spending money that you didn't have.
Right. But that was probably like actually a pretty good price for that, given what was there. It'd be cool to have a Neo Geo, although I suspect it won't ever happen. What about you, Charlie? Any systems you want?
I don't know. I never actually had a GameCube. I think that'd be fun. In particular, Super Mario Sunshine was a game that I never played. So I actually kind of wanted to do that one.
The limited edition Super Mario 3D All-Stars Artificial Scarcity version?
What? No.
You not know about this?
No, I don't.
Nintendo released for the Switch, I think it was Super Mario 64, Sunshine, and Galaxy. Were there any others, Paul? Do you know?
Was it three? I think that's it. It was just the three.
They released it for the Switch, but only for a limited time, even though it was digital. I mean, there's a physical copy, too. And that makes sense. Like, okay, we're not going to sell this forever. But they were just like, on the digital version, after like a certain date, I think it was like, how many months was it? Was it 9 months? Was it a year?
I mean, it might have been a whole year. Like, they just took it off the store at a certain point. Like, But they
told people ahead of time that they were doing this. Like, this is not going to be available forever kind of thing.
Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah, that feels like a very Nintendo thing to do.
Yeah. I know, I remember thinking about getting it, too. It felt like a principled not buy, but now I don't have it. So, there's that. Now I just have to, you know, stick to the principled not buy it on eBay or wherever, you know.
All right. Currently, it looks like you could find a copy for around $160.
Ooh, that's a lot worse than the last time I looked.
Here's some that are around $120.
Oh, yeah. Like when I last checked, they were on the selling them for, you know, $80, you know, whatever, like $20 over, $20 or $30 over the retail, probably because they were abundant at that time.
Yeah. Looks like they're drying up a bit. Here's one for like $100. Yeah. So when Celeste asked to play Super Mario Sunshine, I guess it's either buy a $150 Switch game or probably spend less than that to just get the real hardware.
Yeah.
Although I think, aren't GameCube controllers still desirable because of weird Smash Brothers people?
Oh, like destroying the controllers?
Well, just something about the controllers are like the best Smash controllers or something.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I would have thought that, yeah, maybe just by playing Smash, they just like destroyed the joysticks or something.
That's Mario Party doing the palm spin on the N64.
By the way, Mario Party is one of those games that I never would have believed would have become the franchise that it did. Remember how much we hated Mario Party when we first played it?
Yeah. I've played one of their more recent Switch ones because it was like a bundle with a couple Joy-Cons. So it was like, well, I might as well get a game out of it, right? And it's better than it was.
Okay.
It still occasionally has Mario Party unfair rules, but not nearly as prevalent. And it also has like real, like good job rules as well. So it doesn't feel quite as horribly fixed as that first iteration did.
So I remember we hated, yeah, the fact that it would just like randomly decide who the winner was. And then years later, I was playing like a party game, you know, that any version of like Mafia or Werewolf, right? But there was one with like specific cards that we really enjoyed. And I was playing that with my cousins. And one of them was like, wait, how do you win this game? Like, I can't play this. There's like no strategy that will automatically make you win. And I was like, yeah, it's just a game for having fun, but like he wouldn't play it after that. And it's like, oh, it's kind of like Mario Party, I guess.
It reminds me of the time you refused to play poker unless there was actual money on the table.
I did. That sounds like me.
I think we were like, let's play poker. And you were like, oh, well, what's the ante? And then it was like, why does it matter? It's just chips or something. You were like, no, poker's for gambling or something. And yeah, like it, like you couldn't wrap your head around the idea of playing poker not for money.
Wait, does that mean that Charlie has not played Bilatro yet?
Oh, I've played the crap out of Bilatro.
Oh, so you're a changed man now.
Oh yeah,
that's more putting your time on the table.
Right? I believe it's
there's no getting that back.
I believe it's pronounced Balatro.
Oh, really?
I saw an article the other day.
Sorry, Balatro.
Which then went down a whole GIF thing in the comments.
I mean, at least you could just like ask the developer who's still around. Yeah, exactly.
They did ask the developer, and he said Balatro because it's a real word.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
What does he know?
So you're saying Balatro is to GIF as Balatro is to GIF.
That's basically the impression I got. Yeah.
Okay.
Because it went down the whole stupid like, oh, well, that's not how you say graphical, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, that's not how acronyms work. So no one's out here calling it a lasser.
So wait, what is the word Balatro then?
It's like French or something for Joker, I think, or Jester.
Hmm. Okay.
I think I've only beaten the first three decks in that game, the red, the blue, and the yellow. But I don't think I found it quite as addicting as other people have. It's fun to pick up and play for, you know, a session or two here and there, but I'm not like obsessed with it the way it sounded like other people were.
Yeah, I was working my way through the ante trees and all of them, and I just eventually got to one where I was like, the only way to win this one is just to get lucky with, I mean, that's kind of a little bit true of all of them, but like this one in particular was like, you had to get super lucky with your, you know, whatever you call them, the thing when you skip something and you get a, you know, something for skipping that ante. And it's like, I don't know, forget it.
Oh, gotcha.
Like if I'm just like spamming the reset on it to try to get the right RNG, I'm like, forget it.
That's not poker. That's just slot machine.
That's just gambling. That's not poker.
Well, I apologize to our listeners for accidentally talking about a current game.
Oh, I know.
It's not what you come here for.
Yeah, I know.
Although it does have the retro aesthetic, so maybe we can let it slide.
Well, that brings UFO 50 back into the mix, so I don't know about that.
Yeah. Only if you 3D print the console that I send instructions for and which are in the blog.
I have one more thing whenever we're done with retro stuff, but we can keep talking about that if we want.
So, never?
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's what the podcast is about.
Well, there's a minor focus on Sequest. So if you're about to talk about Sequest DSV, it's okay.
No, I was going to talk about chips.
Retro chips?
No, not retro.
I don't know. What do we think, everyone?
They're surprising. I'll give you that, but
I mean, I associate retro gaming a lot of the time with cartridges, and cartridges have chips in them, and so I think we should allow it.
All right, talk about your chips.
Okay, I got a hold of a small bag of Lay's Taste of Spain limited edition Spanish style garlic shrimp flavor.
Huh.
One time I had a shrimp chip, it was vile.
Oh, wow, yeah. I'm not expecting good things, but...
sounds like
couldn't finish the bag.
This is by way of Thailand?
Wait, it's Spanish style, but it's Thai?
Yeah.
Wild.
There is a store that I didn't know existed in our mall called Exotic Snacks Guy, or maybe Exotic Snack Guys, I don't remember. And so we were going to the mall for something else, and... yeah, I just kind of got engrossed in the store, which had like a lot of interesting Lay's chip flavors and candies and Kit Kats and all that stuff.
So this is typically a Thai flavor, like a Thailand
import? the store or this particular chip?
This particular flavor of chip.
Yeah, it says Thailand on the back of it.
Okay.
Lay's Thailand.
Yeah, because so. Once the shrimp chips, I think, were Japanese. They were in the Meyer World Food section, and they were gross.
But this one at least had English words under the other words, so I was able to determine this was. Some of them, even the pictures of the food, I was like, I don't know. That looks like fondue, maybe, was one of them. I almost got it, but I was like, I can't quite tell. So let's give it a shot. Wow, it smells like seafood. This is not particularly appetizing, yeah. Ugh. All right. Vaguely spicy. It kind of looks a little bit red. I mean, kind of what you'd expect. All right. I've stopped chewing this chip halfway through.
He's not immediately throwing up.
Huh. It smells like shrimp. I'm not sure it tastes like shrimp. I have to eat another one. I have to identify this. I mean, it's garlicky, I guess. Yeah. I think that's probably pretty much what I taste most of all.
Maybe your white wine levels aren't high enough to taste it
properly. Beef, bullets.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I'll have to give us. I kind of taste tomato-y too, like tomato garlic, which is kind of what the front looks like, a weird tomato garlic shrimp concoction.
All right. A strong endorsement of confusion from Charlie Wallace.
But the cool thing is I can go back to the store whenever I want a new chip flavor to try on the podcast. There's all
It'll
sorts
all
of stuff.
Be equally baffling
and equally expensive.
Is there shrimp powder in the ingredients?
Good question. Don't know.
It doesn't read Thai.
Oh, it doesn't have a... You know, a lot of times those will have like a pasted on label meet import rules. I don't know if that's what it's for, but... Or if it's required.
The stuff that is in English, PepsiCo, you know, Taste of Spain limited edition, big pack, although it is what I would call like fun size in the US.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Very skewed.
Oh, ingredients. Oh, there's ingredients. Oh, they give percentages of ingredients. Potatoes is only 60% of the ingredients is potato.
What?
Vegetable oil, 32%. Wow. Seasoning. Okay. Packaging gas.
That's it. Oh, okay. Seasoning.
So it's just seasoning.
Acidity regulator, anti-caking agent, natural flavor. Huh. All right.
So they can just do the
allergen natural. Information. Contains soybeans, shrimp, and squid.
Oh.
It's probably there in the natural flavor.
Additionally, sticker at the bottom. I'm going to have to look this up. Warning, consuming this product can expose you to chemicals including acrylamide, mercury, diethylexyl phthalate and lead. Okay, I'm gonna have to check this one out.
They must have more stringent label requirements.
I'm hoping that's true.
It's, I mean, the acrylamide thing definitely is, because that's just like fried potato or whatever.
Yeah,
that's, they say don't eat more than 5 fries because of cancer or something.
Right. I mean, I guess there's mercury in fish, but maybe I ought to look this up before I eat too many more.
It's like how in the, like, probably anytime you powder something and concentrate it, kind of like the lead risk in protein powders and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, this looks like a sticker that was maybe thrown on at import, and I'm not
probably
sure that means
it came
better.
Into the maybe it's a California thing.
It is a California thing.
Oh, okay. Like
it says on the sticker,
label
yeah.
is required by
by California. Oh. Yep.
All right. Turns out the lead is actually part of the bag itself.
How does he get that shine on the inside?
So I guess the basic question, the question is, what retro games do you think would go best with this flavor of chip?
Are there any Thai video games from the 80s? Did they have a video games industry?
You know, they probably had a bunch of Famiclones, I'm going to guess. And I'm only guessing that because I'm really into the Famiclones now.
I don't think of any games that have shrimp in them. There's like bloopers, like from Mario. I mean,
it's probably in Splatoon somewhere, right? But that's not really, it's not retro yet, so I don't know that it would count.
I mean, the buildings with like a pink facade that are supposedly from Spain that are on the front of the package, I guess makes me think a little bit of that section of Psychonauts.
Which section of Psychonauts?
Oh, there's one with the ball running through everywhere. Okay. Yeah. I mean, not quite as neon, but Oh, that's a retro game I'd like to play. I should have that somewhere, I think.
Neon?
No. Psychonauts.
Oh, Psychonauts. I was playing through that shortly before Psychonauts 2 got released, but I stalled out over the Napoleon map level.
I don't even remember that.
You're basically, it's like a war game going on, and you have to go in and help win the war game for the Napoleon-style general. It's not bad. I think I got distracted and haven't picked it up.
Wait, that's like the third game that I can think of where they add in some sort of war thing and you're just like, well, I'm good.
Me specifically?
Or yeah, because I feel like that was an issue with Brutal Legend.
Yes, that is an issue with Brutal Legend. Well, Brutal Legend, I got sold
a bill of goods.
Yeah. Basically, I did not know going into that game that it was primarily a real-time strategy game.
Yeah.
Oh.
I thought it was like an open world adventure game, which for very large portions it is. And then you go into missions that are real time strategy games.
And I believe Final Fantasy VII?
Yeah, but that's because I hadn't saved for an hour and a half. Didn't want to do all the stuff leading up through that war game.
Oh, okay.
This isn't like a war game in a similar sense. It's just that's the setting that's happening. I think I just got distracted. Anyway, well, that probably is about it. Yep, for this edition of the Gobeski Wallace Report, I'm Adam Gobeski.
And I'm Charlie Wallace. We had two retro guests. We had Doug Gobeski.
Thank you for having me.
And Paul Wilcox.
It was a pleasure.
And if you come visit, we can go hit up the multiple book offs in the Phoenix area to go look at all their Japanese games and such.
I'm ready to clean out the stock to just, I'm going to bring an extra suitcase, pack it solid.
Some of it
it's
is
going to look so good on the scanner.
Yeah, some of it is a bit more expensive.
Okay.
Like, I was tempted by the $29 copy of Crazy Climber, but I ultimately decided not to.
Paul, of course, you don't bring an extra suitcase. You buy an extra suitcase when you get there. Although, no, that would be more expensive to do it that way.
You know, if I can fit everything I need inside a carry-on size, maybe I could fit that in my larger suitcase,
Yeah.
There you go.
Just like a nesting doll.
Yeah. Yeah, people don't nest hard luggage enough. There's not enough talk about that. I'll bring a folding duffel bag, but,
Adam, I don't have room to take these clothes home. Do you want them?
Buddy, just ship those.
Thanks for listening. If you liked that episode, you can go to GobeskiWallaceReport.com, or we've got a lot of social media placeholder accounts. We don't post there so much, though.
Well, we all know about the downfall of Twitter, but everything exciting is on the website. Yeah, there may be a fan wiki out there somewhere. I don't know. I haven't checked recently.
Yeah, that's your job, listeners.
But you can sleep at Charlie's house.
Oh, we're back to this.
Let's pay all its own.
If I can compared isolate normal, it, then it's pretty easy to do a noise removal on it. I always do that anyway, but...
Unless it's something about the fact that we're doing it at a different time of day.
Possible, actually.
So it turns out it's actually solar interference, and normally the Earth blocks it.
I mean, there are crazier things to have happened. That's the only reason astronomers work at night.
And in the nude.
I mean... Wait, what?
Why in the nude?
The interference or whatever. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All that wool clothing, they get electrical interference.
Yeah. Let me go on and check nude astronomer real quick.
I just thought Paul meant like the sleeves get in the way or something. It's too constraining. Got to be loose.
Naked Astronomy is a podcast.
Really?
Yeah,
everything's a podcast.
Well, these people are naked.
Oh, so it's
not a figure of speech.
That feels like a very 90s on the internet thing, Like, let me find the naked version of anything.
Yeah, where's my naked news astronomy edition?